Hey guys, you're listening to the most captivating podcast in iTunes. That's right, the Elite Man Podcast, where we turn average men into elite men every day. We interview the very best experts from the lifestyle, health, fitness, social, and even entrepreneurial worlds. And with their help, we give you some of the best advice on the planet. Subscribe now if you haven't already and enjoy the show. And oh yeah, if you really enjoy it, leave us a review. On today's episode, episode number 27, entitled Becoming a UFC Legend, we chat with the one and only former UFC middleweight champion and legendary MMA superstar, Rich Franklin.
Today we have Rich Franklin joining our show. Rich is a legendary mixed martial arts fighter, former UFC middleweight champion, and he's fought and beaten some of the best guys in MMA history. Guys like Chuck Liddell, Wanderlei Silva, Evan Tanner, and Ken Shamrock. He's currently the VP for ONE Championship, a mixed martial arts promotion. Rich, thanks so much for coming on our show today, man.
Hey, thanks for having me on. How are you today, Justin?
Awesome, man. Awesome. So yeah, man, just to give you a brief intro, but can you tell our listeners, for those who may not be as familiar with who Rich Franklin is, just kind of a little more about your background and how you kind of got into fighting?
I got into fighting kind of by accident, really. Born and raised in the Midwest, Cincinnati, Ohio. I grew up and graduated from high school here in Cincinnati. Attended college in Cincinnati, was studying to be a teacher. Taught high school in Cincinnati for 4 years full-time, worked for another 3 years part-time. But during all that, it was my senior year in high school, I got involved in martial arts, and I trained the whole time I was in college. And I'm just one of those people that anything I do, if I get involved in something, I either put 100% in or I don't bother with it at all. And so I spent pretty much every free moment the entire time I was in college in the gym training. My senior year of college, I took a fight, just a local amateur fight, nothing major. It's just one of those things I happen to be good at. God bless talent for fighting. One fight led to another. I started teaching high school the following year. And then I had my first professional fight that year. And once again, one fight led to another. And it wasn't until my fourth year of teaching where the thought finally crept into my head, like, maybe I can do this full time, actually. So I made that my last year of teaching and kind of pursued this as a career. And the rest of it in MMA is history. It paid off for me.
Was there like a specific reason? Did you have like a lot of fights maybe growing up? Or was it just kind of like something, like you said, like you just picked it up and were like really good at it? Was it like a passion, though, like something you really love to do?
In my fair share of scraps as a youngster, I should say, growing up, because I moved around a bunch. I was I was constantly the new kid on the block because my family, we moved a lot. I wasn't a kind of kid who wanted to get in fights or anything like that. Like, don't mistake what I'm saying for that. Mm-hmm. I've been an athlete my whole life. I played football from the time I was in the third grade on, played basketball several years, played I tried my hand at everything. I tried my hand at the swim team a couple of years, tried my hand at soccer as a kid. But football was my passion. And when I was in high school, I really, really wanted to earn a college scholarship. Now, I was, and you can't possibly understand the magnitude of this statement unless you saw a picture of me in high school, because I was 6 foot, 155 pounds, soaking wet type of kid. And no blazing speed or great strength. So I just didn't have the tools I needed to be a good football player. And my senior year after football was over and I knew that I wasn't going to get any kind of scholarship to play ball, I didn't know what I was going to do. Like, athletically, I'd been an athlete my whole life. And in my mind, I'm like, my athletic career is over. So after football season that year, basically, I got into martial arts as something to do to kind of quench my athletic thirst. And that was it. And I thought, when I was choosing something, like, I could have gotten on like an intramural volleyball team or something like that, or anything I wanted to do. But when I chose, the reason why I chose martial arts is I thought, like, well, this will quench my athletic thirst. And if I ever were to get in a fight on the street and had to defend myself, it'll be useful. So this makes sense for me. And that was really my driving motivation for getting into martial arts. It was just the thought of, like, I'm in college, I'm driving downtown a lot. It's more crowded. There is the possibility of more dangerous situations to be in. So why not learn how to defend myself? And I really enjoy being in, doing athletic things. And so that's how martial arts got chosen. And it just stuck.
Cool. As a side note, you kind of you brought up that you were about 6 feet, 155 in high school.
Yeah.
And obviously, you became a lot bigger, you know, during your fighting days and stuff. Was it kind of just like your body wasn't really developed fully at that time, or did you start like a weight training thing and et cetera?
That's exactly what it is. It's funny. All this stuff kind of timed itself properly. I took a nutritional course in high school as an elective. And I started learning about nutrition, and you know, when I first started learning about nutrition, it's not like I made all these great changes. Like the way I ate as, for example, a freshman in college is nothing like the way that I eat now, because as time goes on, you learn more information about nutrition. Mm-hmm. But I took this nutritional course, and I remember as a senior, I started thinking, like, I really need to start changing my nutrition. Like if I want to be an athlete, like that's what I should do. And when football season was over, I quit lifting at the high school and went to a local gym that was in the neighborhood. And I was nose deep in these muscle and fitness magazines, reading about this bodybuilder eats this and that bodybuilder eats that. And how, if you want to put on muscle, blah, blah, blah. And I also ended up hitting a growth spurt later in life. Like I grew another inch my freshman year of college, basically. And so from the time, like midway through my like senior year, towards the end of my senior year, all the way to the midpoint of my sophomore year of college, for about a year and a half, like this is all I did, and my body hit this growth spurt. And because I was feeding it properly, it just responded really well, and I put on about 35 pounds in a matter of a year and a half. But it was not the same freshman 35 that most people put on. Mine was solid muscle mass, and so I looked quite different by the midpoint of my sophomore year.
So moving ahead a bit, you obviously started winning a lot of fights when you first started off. And, mm-hmm. You know, what was that like? Was it something that kind of took you by storm, or were you surprised that you were winning so much and so frequently? Or was it like, yeah, this is kind of what I'm meant to do. Like I'm this good at it, even though I wasn't necessarily, you know, thinking I was going to be this good at it, but this is like the way it's supposed to be.
Well, I'll tell you what, to answer that, we said, let's move forward a little bit. Let me jump backwards to answer that question.
Yep.
You know, when I was playing football I was a fairly big kid when I was a young kid. And then when I was like junior high, everybody started growing, not only vertically, but they grew horizontally as well. Like kids were filling out and I wasn't filling out. And so when I was in high school, I was just a little runt on the football team, but in my mind, I thought I was like one of the best players on the team. That I just didn't start because of bad circumstance or something like that. And all up until I handed in my football equipment after my senior year, I really thought, like in my mind, I had tricked myself into thinking like, oh, well, there's gonna, you know, there'll be a college out there that give you a scholarship. Like, don't worry about that. I really thought that because I convinced myself like that, don't worry, you're good enough. So in my mind, like I believe that I'm that good at things. Mm-hmm. Which is probably, I don't want to say, I wouldn't say a bit arrogant. I would say a bit ignorant at that point in my life when it came to football, you know. Mm-hmm. But my mindset in martial arts, when I started training martial arts, like I was advancing through the ranks very quickly for two reasons. One, this is something that that I happen to have a good, like a very steep learning curve. I learn very quickly when it comes to martial arts. And two, I spend a lot of time training. Like I put in the hard work. So it was just one of those things that just took off of me. And I knew, like in my mind, I knew that this was something that I was really good at. But making a mistake about it, like my mindset wasn't the mindset of like, oh, I'm going to be, when the day I started training, like one day I'm going to be a world champion. Like I wasn't thinking that way. It was just, it was a hobby for me. And to think like, yeah, I'm really good at this is one thing, but to think that you could possibly win a world title, well, that's taking those thoughts to a completely different level. And so there was a point in time where I started questioning, like, am I as good as people think I am? And there was like a point of self-realization that this is something that I could possibly do and make a really, really good career out of.
And what would you say is the hardest thing, or what was the hardest thing about being a fighter?
You know, I'll tell you, if you would have asked me that question 10 years ago when I had my title,
yep.
I probably would have given you a much different answer. But I would say the most difficult thing about being a fighter is sacrifice. And to live a life where you're going, most people don't understand the amount of sacrifice that it takes to pursue something and to be the absolute best in the world at it. Like, I could, even if I wanted to play the guitar and just be a good guitar player, like, it takes sacrifice because you have to spend time playing your guitar. Mm-hmm. But if you wanted to be the absolute best guitar player in the world, it's a completely different thing. And it takes a lot of sacrifice. And for the person that's pursuing that, it's not viewed as sacrifice because you're doing what you love to do. But for the person who, like, for the people surrounding that person, it's a major sacrifice to them. Like, basically, I'm pursuing this thing that I'm the most passionate about in my life, but so is my family. They're pursuing it with me. Yet, they're not passionate about it. They honestly could care less. They don't care as much about fighting. I mean, they want to see you succeed, but they don't care about it like you care about it. So to you, all that time spent is not sacrifice, but to everybody else, it's true sacrifice. Like, all the people around you have to suffer for the thing that you love, even though they may not have chosen that path. And I think that's the toughest thing about fighting.
Yeah, that's a really good point, because like you said, it's harder for other people to really comprehend like what you're going through and why you're doing stuff and how much dedication and sacrifice you're putting to something. But I mean, it's really easy for you to see it because it's what you love doing. But
exactly. But
yeah, it takes up so much time and energy and effort. Rich, what was your greatest professional accomplishment?
I didn't have a great professional accomplishment. The point I'm trying to make, let me back up before I say that. The point I'm trying to make here is that most people would expect me to point out some sort of fight, like when I won this fight or when I got my title or whatever. But I think my greatest professional accomplishment is that when I decided to pursue fighting as a career, it was at a time when the sport was in a very volatile state here in the U.S. It wasn't was still widely accepted. There were several states where you couldn't sanction a fight. And I remember telling my dad that I was that I wanted to pursue fighting as a career. And my dad looked at me like, Rich, you just graduated college and you have an education. Like, don't throw that away. Like, that was his thought process.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, after the sport started being accepted more mainstream, I ended up winning my title. And just at my first title defense, I remember having dinner with my dad before the fight that weekend. He looked at me and said, hey, man, I just want to let you know, in hindsight, I'm really proud of the decisions you've made and what you've done with this sport. And to me, that's my career highlight.
Cool. Yeah, I mean, that's what you basically wanted your whole life. That's what everyone wants, is I think, for especially as like a son, you want your father to appreciate you and really respect what you've done.
Yeah, so, absolutely.
Awesome, man. Rich, what was your toughest fight? Out of all the tough fights you went through, all the battles, all the wars, Wanderlei Silva obviously comes to mind. You know, some of the other ones, Evan Tanner. What was the toughest one, you would say?
I would say my toughest fight would probably be, and most people wouldn't expect this answer, but Jorge Rivera.
Oh, wow.
The first fight I had that I dropped down to 185, and the two of us just kind of beat the crap out of each other in the cage, and I came out of that fight. I just came out of that fight looking at myself beat up. In my home, I don't have very many things of my fight career hanging. I have two pictures. I have a picture of one of the stadiums that was full when I fought, and I have a picture of my face after the Jorge Rivera fight because it was so beat up. And I just remember that was the first fight where I had really like just stitches and knots on my face, my face swollen real bad. And it was the first time that I thought, like, this is the future, because now I'm fighting an upper echelon of competition, and this is what being a fighter is really like.
Was that also your favorite fight, would you say, just because of that fact?
No, my favorite fight was against Travis Luter. And the reason why is because when my coaching staff and I went in and looked at the film and broke him down as a fighter, we basically predicted everything that he was going to do in that fight, and we set up drills accordingly. And so we had the proper game plan. And you think that I would be able to come out and successfully win this fight, but what ended up happening is that I mis-executed on everything. Failed attempt after failed attempt after failed attempt. And mean, I got myself in the worst possible situation that I could be in that fight. It was the absolute worst winning performance I ever had in my career. And but I took a chance on a move, something that I saw on film, something that we weren't even practicing. And Luter did what I thought he would do. I was able to escape an armbar and end up back on my feet. And of course, I ended up going on to win the fight because from there I got my head right and all that kind of stuff. But the point of that fight is that it's easy to pick a fight where you're in control the whole time and say, oh, this is my favorite fight because you look great. It's a highlight reel. But that was a fight that kind of showed me what I was really made of.
Yeah. And what was Luter's background? Was he a jiu-jitsu guy?
Yeah. Yeah.
And all right. So what would you kind of consider yourself as?
As a fighter, I would just consider myself like a well-rounded, I was that first generation of true mixed martial arts fighters. Like I was the first generation of fighters, because the announcers, like they used to talk about that. They'd say this is the first generation of guys who come up, and rather than being like a boxer who learned how to grapple, I was just part of the group of people who incorporated a bunch of martial arts and trained that way.
Yeah, and it's currently like today's UFC fighter. All the champions are all well-rounded. Obviously, you can't have one discipline that you're good at. So that's cool. You're kind of like the first generation of that new age fighter. Rich, any behind-the-scenes story from the UFC that people might not know about?
I don't know. I wouldn't even know where to start with that, Justin. There's so many things from little nuggets of information to even big things. Little things, like I can remember getting ready for a fight one night. Cindy Crawford came into my locker room. I can remember getting in. Like Jason Statham was in my locker room one time. It's just,
that's so cool.
Yeah, so many different little things. I'd like to say that Cindy was a huge fan of mine, but actually she was a huge fan of Matt Hughes, who happened to be in my locker room as well. So, honestly, I think she was a huge fan of mine. She was pretending to be a fan of Matt Hughes, kind of winking over at me, like, I'm really your fan. So many years, so many different things that have happened to me over the years and stuff like that. But the best memories are the times and the little antics that I have with my team and my coaches and teammates and all that kind of stuff. And the things we used to do, like in our hotel rooms and stuff like that. Those are the best things.
All right, guys, I think it's the perfect time to take a quick break from the episode to remind you to subscribe to our show. By subscribing, you get every single episode completely free. That's right, get all of our best interviews with the best experts from the lifestyle, health, fitness, social, and entrepreneurial worlds absolutely free. Don't miss out on any one of our captivating and exciting episodes. Subscribe now and get all of the Elite Man podcast anytime and anywhere. And yes, if you get a chance, leave us a glowing review about how much you love the show and how awesome we are. Okay, guys, back to the episode now.
Any practical or like... I know we kind of brought it up earlier, but is there any like self-defense like tips you can kind of recommend guys like for just staying safe, like on the street or whatever, or, in like a fight that, maybe they don't want to necessarily be in, but kind of comes to them?
Yeah. I'll tell you what, I got two things. One, I do, for one championship, I contribute articles to Yahoo and SHM over in Asia, and I actually wrote an article on how to avoid getting into a fight like in a bar, which is a completely different situation. Self-defense, mm-hmm. Like if you're walking down the street and you're afraid that somebody's going to, abduct you or whatever. And those are two completely different scenarios. And so I would tell you to do a Google search for the Yahoo article that I wrote on how to stay out of a fight in a bar, because it all boils down to respect. If you can figure out a way to verbally wiggle out of a fight and show the guy that you maybe accidentally bumped into or whatever be the situation, that you respect him as a person, you can avoid a fight. And oftentimes, like in the article I wrote about like buying drink and stuff like that and all those kinds of things. So, if you're walking down the street and you fear like that something could happen to you, like I always tell people, look, I could teach a self-defense move to you, but until you practice something to the point where it becomes second nature, when you learn self-defense moves, you're just going to learn enough stuff to really, really get you in trouble because you're learning something that you're just not proficient at. So I always tell people, an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure, basically. you're walking down the street, and if you're about to walk past a dark alley, and you think, like, hey, man, somebody should be in that alley across the street so that they wouldn't be able to, you know, grab you. Or if you're walking down the street and it's dark on one side but there are street lights on the other, get into the street lights instead, because light is the number one deterrent of crime. Or if you're about to walk into a big group of people, make sure you go around, like, simple little things. And these things are particularly useful for women especially, but, like, a lot of people think, like, oh, well, if I get on my cell phone, then these people won't bother me because they'll know I'm on the phone with somebody, and then they're kind of like witnesses. And it's like, no, if you're on your cell phone, then all that's going to do is distract you so that your attention isn't on the current situation. And you know, if you end up getting in a fight or an altercation, the person on the other end of the phone is just going to end up listening to you fighting. So I always tell people, stay off your cell phone. It's a false sense of security, stuff like that.
Cool, man. All right, I got a couple of rapid fire kind of questions. Just if you can bear with me, just while I kind of rattle them off.
That's okay. Cool.
All right, so the first one is, who were some of your childhood heroes, Rich, like, growing up? Like, who'd you look up to?
Well, I'm a man of faith, and Jesus has always been a pillar in my life, so definitely him. And plenty of reasons why. No need to get into a religious discussion about that unless you want to. but as a child, I would say my biggest hero as a child would probably be Barry Sanders, athlete, running back for the Detroit Lions, greatest running back to ever play in the NFL, in my opinion. But some people might argue that. But either way, I really liked his style of play because, like, Barry was truly one of, arguably the best, but definitely one of the most amazing running backs that ever played the game. His style of run was something that people had never seen before. And he would run, and the thing I love the most about Barry is when he scored a touchdown, I think in his entire career I saw him spike a ball once, maybe twice, but every time he scored a touchdown, he just kind of tossed the ball over to the referee, and he did it like it was his job. Mm-hmm. He just was like, you know, another touchdown. But you know why? Because I'm that good, and that's what I get paid to do, and that's what I do. It's not a big deal. And he just walked off the field. And I really admired that about him because he was so great that when he scored a touchdown, basically it was just his way of saying, I expected to get in the end zone. And so I really appreciated watching him growing up. He's a big influence on my attitude as an athlete, as a professional athlete myself.
Great. Yeah, I was huge, actually. That's funny that you mentioned. He was, like, my favorite football player, too, growing up. I just kind of remember playing backyard football and trying to emulate his moves and stuff. He had all the best juke moves, and he was always the fastest and just coolest guy to watch.
Yeah, well, I played backyard football with my friends when I was a kid. And did you ever watch, remember, like, ESPN Sports Center on Sunday nights when they do all the game highlights? And
yeah.
It would be Chris Berman and Tom Jackson.
Yeah.
And they would have that like, they would play those little songs when they were showing the highlights.
Mm-hmm.
Like, in my mind, I would be humming those songs in my head, and I was, like, making a run and stuff. Like, yeah, I can remember doing the same thing.
Yeah, he was awesome, man. He was definitely the guy to emulate, to pretend you were being while you were playing backyard football. So I agree. All right, next one is, who is your favorite fighter? Obviously, you know, besides yourself, who's your favorite mixed martial artist, like, either that you fought or just kind of looked up to, or someone that you're friends with, maybe?
Oh, man, this is not a fair question. I know so many guys in this sport that how could you answer such a question? you know, there's so many guys that are just talented and respectable. I like watching guys like Benson Henderson because he's a Christian. Somebody like GSP, good dude, and all these guys are, listen, but I'm naming qualities that are aside from the fighting, because these are just like guys that have top quality fighting abilities. I mean, these are just amazing fighters. Frankie Edgar, I mean, solid guy. And all these guys are just entertaining. They're the kind of guys that when you turn on the television and watch a fight, like, they're just going to put on a good show. You know, and moving backwards, like, man, the guys that I've been friends with my entire career, guys like Tim Sylvia and Matt Hughes, and, you know, like, watching them fight and just, you know, just good people. I've been surrounded by a lot of good people in this industry. I think it would be very difficult for me to pick, like, one fighter that's my favorite fighter.
Sure. Yeah, it's fair, man. Absolutely fair. Great answer.
I'll say, I'll say this much. When I first started watching MMA, my favorite fighter was Ken Shamrock. He was a shoot fighter. He was the first of that first generation martial artist that came in like UFC 1, 2, 3 era that truly was like linking things together, like could box a little bit, could grapple and so on and so forth. And so at the time, like, I really respected him for that.
Yeah, it's actually kind of funny that you say that too as well, because he's kind of the one that introduced me to the sport of mixed martial arts, I guess, too, because of his whole WWF affiliation back in the day when I was a big WWF fan. Yeah. And so I started liking him as well very early on. And so what was that like when you actually fought like someone that like him when you looked up to?
Probably one of the most intimidating experiences of my career, because I did look up to him as a young fighter, and then it's Ken Shamrock, the world's most dangerous man. Mm-hmm. And, I'll tell you a little story. So that was the first time that we had done an MMA show live on television with commercial breaks, not an actual pay-per-view. And so I walked out to the cage, we got introduced as fighters, and we're standing in the cage, and then they had to cut the commercial break, and so we're standing there, and then they come back from commercial break, and they kind of semi-reintroduce us before they get the fight started. And it ended up being that because it was live television, that was like about a 6-minute stare down, which is just forever long. and I just remember just standing in the cage thinking, I can't believe I'm going to say it, because I don't like to break eye contact when I'm staring at a person. But man, for 6 minutes, I stood there for 6 minutes bouncing and stuff so that I didn't cool down, refusing to break eye contact with Ken Shamrock. Very, very intimidating experience, to say the least.
That was probably a win right there, just being able to keep the eye contact for 6 minutes. Just to finish off the rapid fire kind of questions and moving on ahead with it, what would you say are your favorite like three books, top books that you read or have read?
Let's go different directions with this. Well, I'll tell you what, one book that I don't travel without is my Bible. I have it pretty much everywhere I go. Mm-hmm. I really liked books like Lone Survivor and American Sniper. If you haven't read the books, don't compare the movie. American Sniper, they did a good job. They did the book justice on that movie. Lone Survivor, in my opinion, not so much. So if you're looking for the authentic experience, make sure you read the book on that one and not actually just watch the movie. And then, the rest of my reads, most of the reads that I do are reads like nutritional books or work like conditioning books or learning, like those kinds of things, like picking up new ideas on training concepts or nutritional concepts or something like that. So different kind of reads.
Cool. Is there like a certain quote or, it's like a passage even that you live by?
Well, I have my Bible verse on the left trunk of my fight shorts all the time. It's Psalm 144:1 that said, "Blessed be the Lord, my strength. He teaches my hands to war, my fingers to fight." And so it's something that just kind of reminds me, like, "Hey, I'm not in there. This is not all just my work that I have with the help of somebody else." But I have written on my wall the critic quote. You know, the critic quote by Theodore Roosevelt. You know that quote?
No, I'm not familiar with that one.
I have a calligraphy, this painting on my wall. It's not the critic who counts, not the man who points out how the strong man stumbled or the doer of deeds could have done him better, but the credit belongs to the man who's actually in the arena, whose face is marred by dust and sweat and blood, who strives valiantly, who errs and comes short again and again, who knows the great enthusiasms, the great devotions, and spends himself in a worth cause, who at the best knows in the end the triumph of high achievement, and who at the worst, if he fails, at least fails while daring greatly, so that his place shall never be with those cold and timid souls who know neither victory nor defeat.
Awesome. That's really good. Rich, were you ever scared when you fought?
Every time. I sit in the locker room before every fight, pray for the lights to go out. I was scared until I walked out and got in the cage, and then once the first punch was thrown, I'm like, oh, it's just another day at the office.
Yep. So was it like an adrenaline thing that you had to kind of contain? Like you didn't want to get too anxious before the fight?
Containing your adrenaline is one thing. an adrenaline response isn't necessarily fear. And courage isn't the absence of fear, by the way. Courage is being able to work through your fears. You know, I'm not afraid to drive down the highway during 180 miles an hour with a proper car. Some people are. Some people are afraid by that speed. I'm not. So it doesn't take a whole lot of courage for me to jump into a car and drive 180 miles an hour. Somebody else would be scared to death to do that. So if they were scared to death to do it and still drove that speed, then that's true courage. And it doesn't necessarily like fear and courage and adrenaline are different things. Like, you can do something that may get your adrenaline going, but you're not necessarily afraid, be it skydiving or jumping into the cage. So it's just all different stuff. But learning how to manage your adrenaline dump, it is a veteran thing.
Can you actually talk about that quickly? What does that consist of?
What, managing your adrenaline dump?
Yeah, is it just kind of practicing it over and over, maybe in the gym or something else?
Well, it's two things. One, it comes with experience. As a novice fighter, no matter how much you practice it, you can't manage it. And some people are you have a better predisposition for managing adrenaline than others. I believe I'm that person. I believe all fighters are somewhat that person, but then you take a group of people who are better at pretty much managing their adrenaline, and within that group, there are people who are better than others. So it comes with experience. I've always been good at it, but I'm better at it now than I was 10 years ago as a fighter. And then the other thing is feeling like you've been in the situation before. When I'm prepping for a fight, I do a lot of visualization exercises, so that by the time I step in the cage, it feels like another day at the office. And in doing so, it's not as a big deal. Like, it doesn't get hyped up in your mind like, oh gosh, oh gosh, oh gosh. It's just like, oh, well, I'm here to do my job.
Mm-hmm. Like visual meditation sort of thing?
If you want to call it meditation, you can, but I'm talking about actually visually running yourself, systematically visually running yourself through the fight.
Okay. Like step by step, seeing yourself do such and such?
Yep. Seeing yourself win, ultimately.
Yeah. All right, cool. All right, Rich, what are some of your, what are you doing today? Like, what are some of the things that keep you busy today? I know we mentioned the one championship promotion that you work with, but what else are you doing? Oh, you can talk about that if you'd like.
Well, today I'll be doing a little bit of work later this afternoon for one championship. I've got some emails to send out and stuff like that. But I don't have a bunch of work to do with them. One championship's actually doing a show in Guangzhou this Saturday. So the team that I work with, they're busy over there, but I'm not being brought to that market because it's the Chinese market and I don't speak Mandarin, and so I'm not as useful in that particular market. So the work I'll be doing, actually today I'm headed to the gym. I have a training session here. I'm going to meet some of my training partners in a few minutes, and that's the first thing that I'm going to do this morning.
Cool. Did you want to talk about, you know, one championship at all and how that's going and or maybe how you got into that and where you're kind of heading with that?
So what do I do with one championship as a VP? It's, I couldn't give you a job description. I do a little bit of business development, make introductions to companies here in the United States for them. And then overseas, I do a little bit on the commentary side, production side. I do a little bit with fighter development. I just came back from Myanmar, where we're looking at expanding into that market. And I conducted a seminar with a bunch of Burmese fighters over there and basically making introductions to MMA, because when one championship expands to a new market, not only are we bringing our product there, but we're also bringing MMA there for the first time sometimes. And so you have to introduce MMA to that culture. So not only are we growing our brand, but we're growing the entire sport in every region that we go into. We did the same thing in Cambodia last year. We're doing it in Myanmar this year. And then there are other markets that we go into that are more familiar with mixed martial arts that we expand into and stuff like that. But I do so many different things for them. Like I said earlier, I'm a contributor to Yahoo and FHM over in Asia and several other things that I do as well.
And any future plans, like a place you see yourself going in the next few years?
I'm focused on. I still train like I'm getting ready for a fight, pretty much every day anyway. So that's never going to go away. My passion for martial arts, I don't think, will ever leave me. Yeah. So that's always part of my future. But I had this job with ONE Championship. I love working for them. Great organization. They're very hungry, and they have big visions of where they want to take the business. And I'm set on making that grow. And as far as the stuff that I do supplementally, like in the past, I've dabbled with film. I'll probably play around with some film a little bit. I do public speaking, good motivational speeches and stuff like that. I do quite a bit of talking, like with the military, and I do corporate speakings as well. So I'm one of those guys who I just have my hand in so many different things that I couldn't predict where I'll be 10 years from now. At one point in my life, if somebody, when I was teaching high school, somebody would have said, "Where do you think you'll be 10 years from now?" I never would have said, I'll be a world champion.
Rich, any last takeaway message you'd like to leave our listener? Parting words, anything like that?
I've been blessed in my career, and I'm truly appreciative of the things that I've been given. And so, just a personal thank you to all the fans out there listening to the podcast that have supported me during those years. It's been a real honor.
Thanks, man. And where can our listeners go to check out more about you?
They can check out my website, richfranklin.com. But most of my information, like current information, I'll do a lot of nutritional and workout posting on my social media, on my Facebook and my Twitter. I'm at Rich Franklin on Twitter. You can find me on Facebook. I'm Rich Franklin, and obviously I'm the one with the most follows.
All right, guys, please check out richfranklin.com, Facebook or Twitter handle. Rich, thanks so much for coming on the show today, man. I really appreciate it, and I know our listeners are really going to love this one.
All right, thanks for having me on, Justin. I appreciate it, bud.
All right, guys, I hope you enjoyed that episode. But before you go, there's one last thing I need you to do. I need you to subscribe to this podcast right now if you haven't already. By subscribing, you get every single episode completely free. That's right, get all of our best interviews with the best experts from the lifestyle, health, fitness, social, and entrepreneurial worlds absolutely free. Don't miss out on any one of our captivating and exciting shows. Subscribe now and get the Elite Man Podcast anytime and anywhere. And yes, if you get a chance, leave us a glowing review about how much you love the show and how awesome we are. All right, guys, that's it. Until next time, take care.